From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson.
Now I've heard there was a secret chord that David played, and it pleased the Lord.
But you Our connection this hour was made in 1984 when Canadian singer-songwriter Leonard Cohen released his album Various Positions. He didn't have much success, and in particular, one song on the album for him was kind of a letdown. It was called Hallelujah. Cohen had worked on that song for 5 years. There were countless verses, countless reworkings, and the version he settled on for Various Positions is not the version you're hearing right now. In fact, it kind of landed with a thud. Walter Yetnikov is the legendary music executive who brought Michael Jackson's Thriller to the world around the same time. He told Cohen that his album was just not a fit for the music world, and he was right. But Cohen did not give up. Once again, he reworked the music, the flow, the verses. He knew that deep in that song there was something special. Alan Light, a music writer, wrote an entire book about the song Hallelujah. It's called The Holier the Broken. One of the conclusions is this: we should be thankful that not every artist is Bob Dylan, cranking out a song in 10 minutes and then walking away, never needing to touch it again. Some artists need time, and with that comes beauty. Leonard Cohen has died at the age of 82. His legacy as a songwriter is pretty well cemented, with Hallelujah at the center of that particular throne. Well, this hour, let's talk about songwriting, what inspires, what succeeds, and whether we're still willing to receive careful, painstaking work like Hallelujah in a pop culture that likes quick, easy hooks, doesn't it? Too often. I've got a couple of songwriters that I can't wait to talk to about this. Connie Deming is here, a singer-songwriter. It's great to have you here. She even brought her guitar, which may get pulled out before the hour is over. Nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Nice to see you, Evan. Thanks.
And Ty Gagnon is here, also a songwriter. And Ty, it's great to have you in studio. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you.
Ty, I'll start with you. The death of Leonard Cohen in the world of songwriters means what?
Oh, my goodness. I started off this year, sort of devastated by the death of David Bowie. And so to lose then another icon, in some ways I am hurting and grieving and mourning. And in other ways, I think I'm inspired to attempt to sort of carry on that legacy. And I may not be the right person to do it. I don't take as much time to play music or to write as I would like, and I think that the art deserves. But that said, I think we all have a certain duty to create beauty in the world, however that may be, and maybe not through music or songwriting necessarily. But for me, that is an avenue for that.
Okay. Connie?
Yeah, I agree with that, Ty. I have the great pleasure of having had a couple of chances to record with a fantastic guitar player in Ireland. And his name is Gerry O'Byrne. And he posted a beautiful speech by Leonard Cohen. I don't know if you saw this. Mm. He was accepting an award 5 years ago in Spain, and from the prince and the magistrate, and he had such eloquence and that beautiful, deep, rich voice of his. And my friend Gerry had one post: a wonderful man, which is huge coming from this guy, extremely, as he says himself, I'm not nice. but I watched it, and both my husband and I were enthralled with what we heard. I mean, there's that incredible voice again that's been silenced, and there's his brilliance in speaking about where songs come from, and he said, if I knew where that was, I would go there more often. And so a voice has been silenced, and I was thinking of all these Irish people that I've met through that experience, because they're, from their country, saying we have lost the great voice of our time, and we all sort of went to there as the musician's king of poems, king of poetry, and poets go somewhere special. That is otherworldly, that, and we all have that inside of us, but in our culture, we're not taught that. And I find that tragic. And that I really believe that it's the artists who sort of hold the world together in times of war and crisis. So
I think that's beautifully said. We're going to be talking about songwriting and its value, how it happens this hour with Connie and Ty. And I want to ask both of you, you mentioned how you go to that place, you know, and what people, Connie just said, I don't know. Well, too bad, Connie. You're going to have to come up with an answer for this. No, I mean, Connie, I do want to start with you on this. As a songwriter, you know, you could carve out time in your day. It could be every morning, could be every afternoon. It could be only when it, something strikes you and only then and never when it's forced. Everyone sort of has a different approach. What is yours?
Yeah, mine is when it strikes me, because I've tried those other ways and they're hopelessly unsuccessful. A friend will come and say, let's write a song together. You know the guy. and I will say, okay, we'll try. And he will sit there and he'll go like this. And then in a few minutes, he's writing. And I'm going, the more I see that, the more I feel like the fifth grader in school when everybody else is writing on the essay test and I'm not coming up with anything yet. And I was always the last one to finish. And I did well, but I could not think when I'm seeing all this going on. And I found out I can't even think when there's somebody else in the room. And I remember once I read that Mary Chapin Carpenter said her tools for songwriting are, number one, solitude. Maybe that's where you hear that otherworldly voice speaking through you. I really think we're conduits. I don't think this and this and this have anything to do with it. I feel lucky when it happens. Even with singing, you know, I'll sing in a church service or a funeral or a nursing home or a concert or anywhere, recording studio, and it'll either happen or not. And funny enough, maybe I'm unique in this and really weird in this, but I can't tell at all what's happening. In fact, one time I got yelled at very badly by a record producer and recording guy, and he said, why did you stop? Because I stopped, I thought it was sucking so bad what I was singing through these headphones. And he said that was the best take you had of that song.
It almost sounds like you are experiencing it from outside of your own body.
Yeah. And I can't explain that, you know. And I read beautiful things by people like Leonard Cohen who can't explain it either. But he uses that, whatever you call it, essence to hear, to listen to. I mean, so you can't plan when you're going to hear this stuff. I remember once again, Mary Chapin Carpenter, I heard her say something like, you just pull it down. And if you don't pull it down, someone else will.
Mm-hmm. Ty, how does it strike you?
I've sort of written in a couple of different ways. So currently, I actually do more of the inspiration strikes, and I'm going to take my notebook out, and I'm going to write down what I'm thinking about, or I'm going to grab my guitar off the wall and play around and see if I can find something out. But previously, I did set aside time every single night. I would sit down and I would write something. And some of those became songs. Some of those became songs that were performed by Violet Mary. I was in that band for a number of years.
And it's a very good local band, by the way.
Yes, they are.
Very good.
I don't know how many of my songs they currently do, but they do a few. So I've had kind of both experiences in terms of just writing and letting the writing kind of direct where I'm going to go next. And sometimes that becomes a poem. Sometimes I hide that away somewhere because I don't like it. And sometimes it becomes a song, and I have a few pieces of writing that I have even looked at recently from that era, from 10 years ago, that I'm still sort of trying to shape and trying to tease out what the identity of that piece really is. And sometimes I've done a full rewrite, and sometimes I've just tweaked things here and there. But yeah, there's some unfinished pieces sitting around.
We're talking to Ty Gagnon and Connie Deming, who are songwriters. And you can find their work in various places, though Connie just scrapped her own website. Felt it got stale? What happened there?
I couldn't edit it anymore. It was broken, and I wanted to find a new web guy, person.
Yeah.
And I searched for about 6 months, and then I got tired of it. And I thought, well, heck, you know, and more musicians started to say, why don't you just go along with Facebook? And you
the
know,
world's
that's
on
how
Facebook,
people,
yeah.
Yeah, so far the avenue hasn't presented itself
okay,
yet. But I'm not getting any younger.
But we can find you on Facebook, yes?
Yes.
Connie Deming, D-E-M-I-N-G, you can find her on Facebook. Ty Gagnon can find some of your work where?
You can find a very little bit on Facebook and on SoundCloud, although you'll find that under my stage name, Zeno Ty. So Z-E-N-O-T-I-G-H.
Okay. They described their processes for writing, which were, I think, pretty different, it's fair to say. And what I want to listen to is the 7th episode in the 10-episode season of Malcolm Gladwell's podcast series called Revisionist History this year was called Hallelujah. And it is all about, well, two songs, really. Cohen's Hallelujah and Elvis Costello, one of his songs that also came out with a thud and needed reworking and a reappointment. And what you learn in this episode with Malcolm Gladwell is that there are people like Chagall who worked and worked and worked at his painting work, and there are people like Picasso who just put it out there and it was done, and you looked at it and you went, it's a masterpiece. How do you do that? Bob Dylan sits down in 10 minutes and it's done. Elvis Costello, Leonard Cohen might need years. So he tells the story of Leonard Cohen and Hallelujah in the episode, and then he also tells the story of Elvis Costello. And I just want to listen to a little bit of Revisionist History. This is Malcolm Gladwell talking about his beloved song from Elvis Costello.
You know how people always say, put your failures behind you, get on with your life, never look back? Elvis Costello does none of those things because he's Cézanne. He's not Picasso. He carries around a little black book where he writes draft after draft after draft of the songs he's thinking about. He changes lines in the middle of songs he's already recorded. He rearranges songs at different tempos or in different time signatures. He cannibalizes his own work, creating new songs out of old songs.
Sounds a little bit like Cohen and Hallelujah, doesn't it? It's a fascinating episode, really worth the listen to if you want to check it out. By the way, I said Chagall, I meant Cézanne. Cézanne was very much on the painting realm, like Costello, like Cohen. So Ty, for you, have you ever found yourself spending weeks or months or years on a song and revisiting, and then maybe you're driving one day and you think, you know, I buried that half-written song and now it just struck me and there's something there.
Yeah. I mean, I have had the experience of having a song sort of show up fully formed and 10 minutes later it's done.
Isn't it?
Oh, it's such a relief.
Yeah.
But those are so, I mean, I think I've had that happen twice.
Yeah.
And I think it's also true that my relationship to those songs changes with time. And something that I may have thought was fully formed or nearly there, or a song that I thought was finished, years later I might come look at it and I'm a different person, and that song becomes a sort of different entity. And so I may go, oh, we've got to fix that now. So in a sense, I don't know that I have any song that's ever really done.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And I've had plenty of songs that have taken years, have taken months to really work out. And even when I feel I've got them to a good place, I there's almost in a sort of antagonism there with the song, because the meaning of that song changes based on who's listening, based on who I am at a given time.
And, absolutely.
So sometimes I look at those songs and they're alien to me. And I, you know, have to sort of work with that kind of in my own internal process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have done very little songwriting of any success, by the way. But I remember one day driving, I was tossing the Frederick Douglass, Susan B. Anthony Bridge on the way home. And a song came into my head that I thought I had never heard before. And I got home and I grabbed the guitar and I cranked it out and it was done in about 10 minutes. So one time, it happened to Ty like twice. It happened to me like once. And you know what I was sitting there thinking? Is this mine or is this somebody else's? I mean, like, I was so gripped with the completion of it that I thought this has to. But what is music if not sort of a composite of our experience from understanding life and other art, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking of a song that I wrote earlier this year that I was like, oh, this is great. This song's really going well. It did take a few iterations to get there. And then I listened to it again and I was like, oh, that tagline, that's from Ring Them Bells by Bob Dylan. Like, I just totally, it was somewhere in my head and I took his chord progression and I kept it because I think it's a different enough song to not get in trouble for that. But
well, we'd be in real trouble if you couldn't use G, C, and D. So,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Connie, what about you when it comes to, you know, that... the willingness to go back and rework. And I thought Ty's comment is so interesting. No song's ever really done for the reason that we're never done as people. But
oh,
what do you think?
Absolutely. I just have great problems that if my brain gets in the middle of it somehow, or my mind, or my, I don't know what, my trying so hard to be this great thing ruins it. So, but I have gone back into my notebooks and reworked things a little bit and replayed them, found a, you know, take away a chord, keep it simple, you know, and but I find that I need to go to another voice that I respect that is totally intuitive. I mean, that's that Irish guitar player I mentioned for me. I will play him a song. I will put my guitar down, and he literally has a gift to walk into a song and pull out exactly what it needs and what it doesn't need right now. He does it in 5 minutes. It's a wonderful thing to watch. And so he's taken a couple of my songs and done that with. He's not touched others. He goes, I'm not touching that. But then with this one, and you have to totally, I feel I have to totally accept that. Recently, I wrote a song. I was so smitten by hearing Liz Wright this summer at the Jazz Fest. I don't know if you've heard her, seen her. Oh, my God. But so I wanted to write a song thanking her. Right. And, of course, it came out too specific and too much of my voice that only I would know what I'm talking about. I mean, there was a line. I don't know if I can remember it. See, I can't even remember it. But it was my favorite line in the song. And he took my paper and a pencil and he goes through in about four places. And that was one of them. He goes, you don't need that. So he said, but this is an important song and I want you to go home and finish it and work on it. So I'm thrilled to have that kind of help. I don't feel like I have it by myself very much. So to hear you and so many other really good songwriters speak that way about, you know when it's done, you know when it's good.
You're thrilled to have the help, but you said when you're sitting in a room with people, you can't create from new.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
so there's a difference.
Wonderful. Oh, yeah, synergy.
The feedback, the editing is different than creating to something new.
Oh, yeah.
In a room. Okay.
Yeah, because now you've had time by yourself to find these chords you like and, you know, find these little lines that you think sound good. And sometimes the ones I thought sounded the best weren't the ones that I should have kept.
Well, I think we have a fan of yours on the line. Mary is on the line. Go ahead, Mary.
Hi, Connie. It's Mary from Flipside.
Hi, Mary.
You had written a song about your dad, Passed It On, and I remember asking you, I said, did that song really just come flying out of you? And you said, yes.
That one did.
Your son and your husband had gone out for a walk after your father's death, and it just sort of came to you. And it was so beautifully written. And so well done. And, you know, you just got a real essence of your dad. And it was such a lovely song. I just wanted to let everybody know about that song.
Oh, thank you so much.
All right.
Yeah, you're right. That came out. I had an autistic. I still have one, but he's in a group home now. But I was 24/7 running around my autistic son for 17 years. And if my husband was available and able to take him for a walk, that would be my hour, you know, to try to do something. And that song, my dad had just had a massive stroke at age 86, and it took all the gifts that, you know, with him that my dad had. And that song came out in an hour. But the next day, the music happened. So that was before my brain.
So the lyrics came out in an hour?
Yes.
And then the music followed it?
Yes.
Okay.
That's usually the way it goes with me. Usually.
Words first, music next.
Usually, yeah.
Ty, what about you? Yeah.
That's a little bit of a mix. I will often write songs that are lyrics first. Part of the reason I resonate with Leonard Cohen and his experience of songwriting is because I actually got into this as a poet first. I had some difficulty certainly translating the type of poetry that I liked into lyrics that were singable. So I often had sets of lyrics and then sets of music, and I had to sort of experiment and find out how to put those together. More recently, I have been playing with off and on with a swing band in town, the Gregory Street Vagabonds, and I wrote a tune for that, and that was one where the music came first. I had the melody there, I had the chords there, and I wound up putting words to it, and they wound up being a little cheeky and a little funny just because they were the ones that fit the melody.
Right. Yeah, well, before we pivot the conversation, Connie, for people who may want to check out the song about your dad, is it out there in the world for them to consume?
Oh, yes. It's called Pass It On. It's on a CD called Touchstones. It was done 6 years ago at the Dady Studio. John Dady and Joe, and they played on a couple of the songs. And, yeah, it's out there. And I am the store, so if you want one, find me on Facebook.
There you go.
Or call me up, and I'll meet you for coffee and bring it to you.
Yeah, Connie Deming, the song is Pass It On, if you want to check it
Thanks,
out.
Thanks, yeah.
We're talking to Connie Deming and Ty Gagnon, who are both songwriters, and we're talking to them about the passing of Leonard Cohen and what inspires them as songwriters. If we think, I think there's a lot of different prongs to this, and we can take it in a lot of different ways, but since I'm the host of the show, damn it, I get to pick some of the music. So what I wanted to do, I want to kind of talk about songwriting in two different ways for a moment. First of all, I think there is songwriting that is, sometimes it's just an extraordinary turn of phrase that you think, why do we even have cliches when you can say something that profound or that beautiful or that new? And then there are times where I think you're writing about an experience that matters in the world. And I'd like to just play a little bit of a song that came to mind for me, a band that a whole lot of people probably know. They're from Texas. They're called Jacko Pierce, and mainly a duo. They've recorded a number of albums. But Jack O'Neill from the band said that he was sitting on his couch in suburban Dallas one day, watching the evening news and watching late 80s, watching genocide in Sarajevo and watching the siege of Sarajevo, and he said, how in the world can we have a world where I'm sitting comfortably in a house, and in another country in the exact same world there's ethnic cleansing going on, and there's fear and starvation and suffering and cannons going off, and that fear of, is tonight the night that it all ends? So how can that happen? And he wrote a song called Anderson's Luck that he wanted to just express that strangeness, that there could be one family with such comfort and another with such fear. And I'll just play a little bit of that song. This is Anderson's Luck from Jacko Pierce.
The 10 o'clock news is on. In the mouth of the mountains, the city lies still under siege. My wife reads quiet at the firelight. Turn it off, step outside for wood from a fallen tree. Winter's on now. I got some coffee on. Safely in the city, yeah. Winter's on now. They ain't no wood anyhow. They laid them out in dirty shields. People open wide your eyes to the new day dawning. People open wide your arms to your brothers. And people open wide your eyes.
So that's Jacko Pierce, and Jack O'Neill later said that he thought he did a poor job writing the song because too many people came up to me after show saying, I love Anderson's Luck. What is it about? And he had to explain it. And I wonder, Connie, can you write something that's beautiful, that's meaningful to you, but if the audience doesn't exactly receive it, does that take some of the power of the songwriting out of it?
You know, I don't think it takes the power away, but it feels disappointing to me to not connect with that place in them that I feel the song comes from. And yet, in order to do that, they have to deeply be listening. And how often does that happen? I mean, I don't think you've really heard a song until you've listened deeply to it at least three times. Then you might begin to hear, what are these lyrics saying? You know, you might just hear the music, or others of us like might just hear the words or need to read them right away while they're hearing it, you know. But, I think it's a tough thing. And I just finished reading Bruce Springsteen's incredible, have you read it?
I haven't yet.
Oh, my God.
No, I know, I haven't yet.
It's rich,
I've had
wonderful.
I've had a lot of things going on in this country. A lot of work. It's been busy. But no, that's definitely on the late fall list for me.
But he speaks of the, I love it. He never speaks of his performance in terms of just him. He knows what he's doing, and he loves talking about that. And he always speaks of the audience as the other necessary yang to the yin. And it's a beautiful thing. I wish I had one of those quotes in front of me right now, but there's tons of them in that book. It's a wonderful thing. And you don't often hear entertainers or performers or, you know, singers talking about how important the audience is to the equation.
That's so interesting to me because before the Jazz Fest, the two Jazz Fests ago, I talked to a longtime artist who said, you know, I'm painting now. I've written music for years. I'm painting now. And I don't really care if anybody gets it. I care that I get it.
There you go.
And Connie, you're saying,
I'm still getting there. I just turned 68 and I'm still getting there.
But you're saying it really does matter, or at least it impacts you if they...
It does. You are with a microphone and there they all are. And they've driven out there to supposedly see you. And they're going to ask for a song and you're going to say, well, no, my needs are more important than yours. You know, I don't know. I think it's a blend of your, what you want to do and what they really want to hear. If they really want to hear it.
I'm with you, by the way, on this. I always find, as a listener, I want to know what it's about. And I'm always sort of curious to know if I can really alight on exactly what it's about. And the small occasions where I've written, I thought there's almost there's a peril in becoming too overt because you want to make sure that you don't have a Jack O'Neill moment where you write the song where you think it's this important expression on this dichotomy in the world, but nobody's getting it. So you don't want to be too overt. Subtlety is fun sometimes. It's beautiful sometimes, but people may miss it.
I think tons of Leonard Cohen songs are like that. I mean, they're incredible. You could ruminate on those lyrics for years. And he might not know exactly what he's trying to say, but I think he did know what he was trying to say exactly. And he didn't care whether, I don't think, he cared whether you got that line, you know.
Yeah, maybe he was past what you and I deal with right there.
Kind of.
Well, let's see if Ty, I mean, how important is it to you that the audience is receiving it the way that you wrote it?
I honestly, not that important.
See, it's fun to disagree, isn't it?
So just to give some context for that, a lot of the poetry that I was writing and that I was attracted to was more about how words actually sounded next to each other. And so I would put words together, not necessarily because they had a particular meaning, but because I liked the way it sounded out loud. And that carried over into a lot of my early songwriting. And so the meaning of it, in a sense, was almost purposely obscure. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with an audience who hears that song deciding that it means something in particular for them. And I don't expect, you know, even in conversation, for people to understand me fully. So I don't understand. I don't feel the need when I'm making art to think that they're suddenly going to do that now.
Sure.
That said, I do think there's a sense where not every song is profound or needs to have a really meaningful message. I have one that is, it's a little blues tune that I visited New Orleans and met, you know, essentially a scam artist who gave me a shoe shine even though I didn't want one. And
I don't even know what that means, but that's fascinating. continue.
And the song is almost word for word things that he said to me, and that's it. That's the song, and it's fun and it's funny, and there's not a lot of question about what it means, because it's just an experience I had, and it's a description.
Yeah. That's good.
I want to hear the song.
It's all okay, you know.
No, I want to hear the song too. I'm late for a break. Tom in Rochester wants to share a personal experience about Cohen. We're talking about Leonard Cohen, his passing, and frankly, this is just an excuse for us to talk songwriting. Is there something so wrong with that? Does the world occasionally need a break from the heavy stuff? I think we do, and we've got two great guests, Connie Deming and Ty Gagnon, are here. They're talking about their approach to writing. And we'll get back to your phone calls and continue this discussion on the other side of this break. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, pundits had predicted, many pundits had, that Donald Trump's actions and words would cause women to recoil from him. But he dominated the election with white women. We're going to hear from them about why they decided to support the next president. Then in our second hour, a doctor-to-be writes a piece for the Washington Post saying he regrets donating a kidney. We'll talk to him, and we'll talk about organ donation. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. I spent our short break leaning on our guests to play a little music for us before the hour's over. I think they're willing to do that, but we're not a performance show, and they know they don't have to do full songs. I mean, I really just a verse or two would be awesome to hear from you guys. Let me grab a phone call. This is Tom in Rochester. Go ahead, Tom.
Hi. Just a couple of quick comments. One, I grew up with Leonard Cohen's music. He influenced me. I'd learned all my guitar playing and memorized all the songs from his first three albums back in the early 70s. And it really changed my life in a lot of very fundamental ways. And a good friend of mine in, I think, 1976, when Leonard was living in Montreal, was a big fan and just decided to go and meet him. And you could look up his phone number, his address in the phone book. And he went to his house and literally knocked on the door, and Leonard Cohen answered it. And they went in and had coffee. And then Michael took Leonard to a baseball game. And he sat with him at a baseball game. I've got some great pictures of the two of them sitting together, you know, watching a baseball game in Montreal. And the other is I live with... my life rotates around singer-songwriters, and I work with a couple of great musicians. One of them is named John McCutcheon, who wrote a song many years ago called Christmas in the Trenches. And it's one of those songs that Tom Paxson describes as, you know, some songs you write and some songs you just write down. And Tom says that about a lot of the songs that he's written that are, you know, he doesn't really know where they came from. He labors, you know, works very hard on some songs, and some songs, as he says, you just write down. And it sounds like that's, you know, what some of these songwriters deal with also. And it's a special moment when that happens, from what I understand.
That's awesome.
That's all. Thanks.
Tom, thank you. Thanks for that phone call. That's really beautiful. Do you ever find yourself writing down, but all of a sudden you go, boy, that looks great on paper? It's going to stay there. Or, you know, is there music for it? Does that happen?
Well, yeah. Yeah, it has. And, yeah, I mean, sometimes I'll get four lines that I really like, and I can't for the life of me think of where it's supposed to go. So there those four lines sit in the notebook.
Do they ever migrate to another partially finished song later?
Once in a while, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, not too often. I think that happened once or twice.
What about you, Ty?
Yeah. Oh, man, I'm thinking specifically of, I have a notebook and I have a page that has just a chord progression that is, it's probably 16 bars long. And it's like convoluted and weird. and I really still love the sound of it. I never found a place for it. Mm-hmm. So it sort of exists only as that. But there are definitely songs where I wrote and maybe I tried to cram the words into a particular form and only one stanza really worked. And I've cannibalized those and said, you know what, the rest of this, not happening. But this, this I'll take. I'm going to put this over here.
If my brother's listening in Florida, every time I see my brother, he always picks up the guitar. We have a pretty musical family. And there's one in particular piece of music that he's written. And every time I see him, I think, I love this. You play it every time. When are you going to put lyrics to it? And now it's like it's too late. It's almost like his he never could figure out the right way to, he just loves the music of it. So it's the opposite of what Tom was talking about. Sometimes you write something and you write it down. No, this was a case of music that lives without lyrics.
Yeah, cool.
So one more little clip I'll play just to kind of pivot the conversation, because Ty being a poet, I'd love to get his take on the value of writing in a way, sometimes not even profoundly expressing, you know, maybe you're not writing about war or, you know, sort of big subjects, but just writing about life. And one subject that comes up in a lot of music, of course, is loneliness. And so I'll out myself. I'm not going to be ashamed to admit it. I think Adam Duritz is a very good lyricist, and he wrote a song that was sort of a mainstream hit, but I don't think anybody fully appreciates how great the first line of the song is, because you could say, she feels alone, or, and around here, you could say it this way.
Step out the front door like a ghost into a fog where no one notices the contrast of white on white.
That's, in between the moon and I love, that's incredible to me. Step out of the front door like a ghost into the fog where no one notices the contrast of white on white.
Wow.
What an incredible way to say she feels alone.
Ooh.
She feels unnoticed in the world.
Yeah.
I think that's fabulous. So let me ask the poet, Ty, you know, how valuable is it to you to be able to feel like when a song is done, that or done, again, songs are always in process, but done with air quotes, that you feel that you've expressed something in a way that is either new or interesting?
Oh, wow, yeah. I mean, I think personally I'm very drawn to novelty. And so sometimes it sort of drives me to try out chord progressions that sound terrible. like I'm somehow going to invent a new sound that didn't exist before. But yeah, I think being able to say something in a unique way, in a way that... maybe people haven't heard or haven't thought about before is when you can do it yourself, it's an amazing feeling. But it's an amazing feeling when you see somebody else do it, mm-hmm. too. One of my favorite songwriters is Ryan Adams. And I'm thinking of a line from one of his songs that just makes me misty every time I hear it. And I've heard it, you know, 30 times.
Are you going to share the line?
Yeah, absolutely. it's a song sort of about this breakup and, you know, missing this other person. And the line is, see her smiling at him. That used to be me, but I can find her in a thunderstorm just by the way that the rain falls.
Cool.
Still gets you?
Oh, I'm feeling it right now.
Connie, how about you when it comes to, you know, we've talked to how Connie is a little different this hour in terms of she has out-of-body experiences where she leaves her body, she gets to sit on the ceiling and watch herself write music, and then it's over, and then she gets...
It's not quite that way.
It's not quite that way, but it's, you know, it's these, you know, so you feel almost like you're channeling something as the music comes through you. When it comes to writing lyrics, you know, how do you sort of... feel and approach that?
Yeah, I feel like that channeling thing when I'm singing. Writing, I feel like it either happens or it doesn't.
Okay.
And later, I have to think of how to finish it or how to edit it somehow and take a boring word and find a more interesting word that I like better with more color and texture. But now, what did you ask me?
Well, I just want to know, you know, when it comes to lyrical creation and expression, there's enough cliche in the world.
Yeah.
And this is not to offend commercial radio, but I mean, it's easy to find it all over the dial, and it's pretty popular. Cliche in terms of short hooks, similar chord progressions. That's why Ty is always trying to create something new. But, you know, lyrics that aren't exactly profound.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you feel about sort of lyrical creation and the desire to say something that is at least interesting?
I love words. I feel sad that my memory seems to be leaving me. So I used to be able to get in a car and just write things. Now I get in the car and nothing happens. I sit at the desk and nothing happens. And it takes a whole lot to spark something these days. So it's sad to get old when your memory gets unplugged. But I absolutely love playing with words and poetry and song. And so, you know, listening to a songwriter like Leonard Cohen or Joni Mitchell just, you know, floats my boat because the words are so beautiful.
It's like 99% great to me, and then it's 1% infuriating that they can do that and I cannot do that.
Oh, yeah. And I don't feel like I have that gift. I have a friend that tells me that I absolutely do, but I don't think I have it. You know, I think I get lucky once in a while.
Can I ask, though, is it possible that people who have that gift, it's not for you to evaluate, it's for others? You
know, I think so. That's why I love hearing other people's take on things, because I'm clueless, truly. Everything from good, bad, to indifferent. I have no idea whether it's really good or not. And so when a friend will say, man, you're just the best writer, you know, that's the best song you ever wrote, I don't know what they're... I'm happy they like it, and I'm happy I finished it, and that it feels good to sing it. But I just don't know.
I think it's possible. I mean,
it's weird.
Ty, isn't that how it often goes with evaluating art? The artist doesn't get to determine their place in.
Oh yeah. There are plenty of songs that I've written, poems that I've written that I thought, oh, this is the one that people are going to love the most of anything. And, you know, and then they turn around and they're sort of like, oh, I like that song. I'm like, oh, that one? I don't like that one. And
that was to fill out the record. What are you talking about?
I wrote that on a dare.
What? I know.
That's a true story. I did write a song on a dare and people liked it. So I don't know, you know?
You did?
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, but there's other songs that are like that. You know, Sweet Child of Mine was practicing, skipping strings on the guitar. And someone else heard it and was like, hey, let's make that into a song. And
you wind up
with this iconic tune. And, you know, art comes from weird places. And it is on the audience to decide what that art is.
Well, for others. Before we listen to a little bit of music, Megan Mack, let's do two things, producer of this program. Let's ask our audience on Twitter what their favorite single lyrical line from a song is. We'll get some interesting. I should have done this earlier because now I've got no time to relay this. But I'll spend the afternoon reading this going, yeah, that's good, that's good. Or I disagree completely, and that's the beauty of art. But before we ask our guests, Ty Gagnon and Connie Deming, to just play a little bit for us, I wanted to ask both of them. They have some experience in the music industry, and I try to resist cynicism, but I see what becomes big, big successes, and Leonard Cohen is the outlier, and there's a lot of stuff out there that you wouldn't consider to be maybe lasting art, whereas Cohen's stuff is largely lasting art. Connie, are you cynical at all about the music industry, about what people are willing to consume, about how thoughtful people are with lyrics?
Well, now I am.
With writing? I didn't mean to set you up, but you don't have to say yes. In fact, I'm hoping you're going to say no.
I'm out of the mainstream pop, you know, whatever is popular now, but I got out of that because I couldn't hear the lyrics very well. I could, you know, but I think music is always going to be important. It's going to live through every era, every person, forever. It's a healing tribal I don't know. You could go on and on, but it's the most important art I think we have, because it, as they call it, music of the spheres. You know, it's out there and it lives through all of us in ways we don't understand. We can't see it. We can hear it. Where did it come from? You know, I'm babbling, but I just.
That's okay. There's no babbling there. I was hoping you'd just tell me and say, no, Evan, it's fine. People are still consuming. One of the reasons I think I'm less optimistic is I'm not one of these people who's always get off my lawn about technology, but I remember summers. I remember working at a camp in the summers, and I remember my one period of the day off. I wasn't on a phone because there were no cell phones. I would lay on my back on my sleeping bag and with headphones on and just listen to music. And just listen and absorb it. And sometimes in very emotional states. And I just don't know if that happens as much anymore. Or maybe it does. And maybe I'm just totally out of touch, which is what happens when we get older. Right, Ty? Tell me I'm out of touch and it's fine.
I think so. I think you're being too hard on pop music. I also think you're being... I think you're incorrect about the past. You know, what we have is great music from the past because... what we have is the music that lasted. So it looks like everything that came out of 1960 was amazing, but it wasn't.
Because we weren't there.
Yeah, there was a lot of lousy, unlistenable stuff that happened. And a lot of it just kind of fell by the wayside. And I think that's what's going to happen too. You know, pop music is sort of white bread.
Connie, grab your guitar, by the way.
Ooh.
Why don't you get ready? Because we would love to hear from both of you. Go ahead.
You know, pop music is sort of white bread. It still nourishes you. It's just not particularly special. But sort of everybody has access to it.
Yeah, and I am not, again, I'm not a pop music hater. My son and I have dance parties to Justin Timberlake. And it is, and I am not embarrassed about it. Mariah Carey dance party this weekend. I'm just going to own it.
Yeah.
He's 4.5. He's got moves. There are moves. So yes, everything with its place. And thank you, Ty, for at least talking me off the ledge a little bit about this, because you're right. I mean, what lasts is what is, you know, what is more memorable. And it's hard for us to determine in the moment what comes out of any era.
Yeah.
As it happens. Yeah. Yeah. Connie, what are you going to play a little? Just a verse or two. And while she's green, you want to grab yours, Ty?
Yeah.
Because we've got about 4 minutes left here.
Oh, gosh. But go. Well, then I'll seriously.
I only need a minute from each of you.
Okay, a minute. Uh-oh. Well, for some unknowable reason, and I never play this on the guitar, so I just thought, probably because it's millions of people have recorded this. You say I took the name in vain. I don't even know the name, but if I did, well, really, what's it to you? There's a blaze of light in every word. It doesn't matter which you heard, the holy or the broken. Hallelujah, 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 hallelujah.
You are amazing. You really are. You don't get to decide this. Your friends are right. Through the booth, through the glass, you're getting an ovation in there.
Thank you. That's a verse you never hear.
And there are so many verses of the song, apparently.
So many.
Yeah.
And the one about shooting you isn't even Cohen's. It's Buckley's.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you for that, by the way.
Welcome.
Yeah, that was incredible.
Thank you.
Connie Deming, you can find her on Facebook just for now, and eventually there will be a website again, we think.
We hope so.
Any
websiters out there want to create me a nice, easy to use site?
So that's
cheap. I don't want much.
So that's on the heavier side. Ty, you got about a minute to play whatever you you're gonna play, the one that you talked about.
Yeah, I'll skip a couple of verses, make it a little shorter here.
Go ahead.
So yeah, this is Jackson Square Blues. Betcha I can tell you where you got them shoes. I betcha I can tell you where you got them shoes. Got them on your feet in Jackson Square, New Orleans. Ten and ten is 20, I don't want your change. 10 and 10 is 20, I don't want your change. Don't want your change in Jackson Square, New Orleans. Go on and ask me, what am I doing now? Go on and ask me, what am I doing now? I'm wasting your time in Jackson Square, New Orleans.
These are actual things people said to you.
No, this is actual things one guy said. One,
just one guy. He wrote the song for you, Ty.
He did.
Ty Gagnon's work appears in a number of places. And by the way, what's the handle that you can find it on SoundCloud?
Zeno Ty.
Zeno Ty.
Z-E-N-O-T-I-G-H.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
It's been my great pleasure. Connie Deming, thank you as well.
Thanks.
Hallelujah's been covered by so many people. It even sounds great when Chris Botti does it. Thanks for listening today to what great songwriting is all about with these great guests. Have a great afternoon.